I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear an interview that Great Barrington radio show host Frank Tolupko and I did at the Toronto hearings on September 12, 2011, with former senator and presidential candidate Mike Gravel and George Ripley of Washington, D.C. That will be followed by a brief update on the ballot initiative process, and then I'll tell you about an exciting speaker who will be here on December 2nd and 3rd to talk about her research on the Pentagon. So first for the interview. Senator Gravel is working to get a new investigation into 9/11 by going through the ballot initiative process that is allowed by 24 states, including Massachusetts. In September and October of this year, Senator Gravel was exploring the possibility of conducting a ballot initiative process in Massachusetts, and I'll tell you more about that at the end of the interview. He was one of the speakers at the Toronto hearings, and this interview comes from our interactions with him there. The interview was conducted outside, so at times there's some minor interference from passing traffic and a barking dog that I was unable to edit out. So here it is, our interview with Senator and former presidential candidate Mike Gravel of Alaska.
Well, actually, I became aware of what you'd call the fix of the whole 9/11 situation by knowledge, political knowledge, of what was going on in the country for the last 40 years. And that's been my public life, is fighting the military-industrial complex. And this whole charade of what happened on 9/11 is all part of that. So there's a continuum. So when I saw it happen, I was in a depression about for 3 days. Was the loss of life was bad. But what was happening to our democracy, because I knew what the leadership of Cheney and Bush and Pearl and all the other neocons were going to do to this country, and that is to gin up wars so they could sustain the military-industrial complex that they're a part of. So I didn't need all this scientific information to come to that conclusion. Now, what this scientific information that we've seen over the last 10 years developed by the volunteers, scientists, citizens doing proper citizen work of developing the body of knowledge that now exists, and unfortunately many of them saying, well, we got to get the Congress to act, we got to get, you know, the media to focus on this. Well, here, the Congress and the media are controlled by the people who control the events of 9/11. So going to them for a solution is a dead letter. So obviously, then what can we do? Because all of this information has to be exposed to the American people and to the world. How are you going to do that? You need a legal investigation. Well, how are you going to get a legal investigation when the government doesn't want to do it? My background in the last 25 years has been to try to bring about direct democracy. That is to make people in the United States and hopefully throughout the world lawmakers, to be able, because the central power of government is lawmaking. So the task we have to try to bring it about is to make people lawmakers. I have legislation, meta-legislation called the National Initiative to do that. But that equipped me to look at what was being done in the 9/11 truth movement and say, hey, these people need an investigation that's legal to be able to bring their information forward to the American people.
So what is your plan for getting this investigation going?
Well, it's to utilize the only device we have in the United States that exists in 24 states where citizens can make laws by initiative. Now, the problem is that every one of those 24 states that this enabling legislation is not the best. It's got flaws, but it's still better than nothing. And so what I came up with as a result of meeting in September of 10 in New York with the truthers was that, look at, why not have an initiative that will create a new commission? They thought it was a great idea. It was just an idea then. this is an idea that has no precedent in American legislative history, either an initiative or with respect to the government.
So this is essentially a petri dish of American politics, with the greater good being to find out what actually happened on 9/11.
That would be the result of it. And so now what we got to do is drop something in a petri dish, and that's a good idea, which means that you want to depend upon the people, not the government, because they're not going to give you an investigation. So I turned around as a result of realizing and being encouraged by the various leaders in the movement. I met with the Legislative Council in the state of California, and we designed legislation that I dictated to them, and it fit, and we came away from that. And then I went to the Legislative Council of the state of Oregon and did the same thing. So now, coming out of Oregon, I have a piece of written legislation, not very long, 3 pages. And then in Massachusetts, the deadline for filing came upon us. I had forgotten about it, and that was August 3rd. So I had to file in Massachusetts a piece of legislation that we changed slightly with the help of some citizens in Massachusetts and submitted it to the state government. And the Attorney General last Wednesday rendered the certification saying that what we're doing is legal and it's proper to do it in Massachusetts. We already have established that in Oregon. We've established that in California. So now we have a legal device that has already been certified in Massachusetts, and we're able to go out and get signatures on petitions to qualify the initiative to be on the ballot. We need 80,000 signatures to do that.
And what are your plans in the next couple of weeks to try to drum up interest in this initiative in Massachusetts?
My plan is just what I'm doing right now in talking to the media, talking to people who hear my voice. We need people to contribute money. We need 80,000 signatures. It takes $2 to $3 per signature to have this happen. And so we need people to go to our website, which is 9-11cc.org. That's charliecharlie.org. And there's a place where you can contribute on that. Let me repeat it again, because that's the most important thing of all. This thing will only happen, now that we have it legally established, it will only happen if we get the money to fund the signature campaign. And that can be done by people going to 9-11cc.org. And you'll see a little place to contribute and the goals that we have in that regard. We're hoping that also we'll get an angel that will put up a significant sum of money, because in Massachusetts, and here again, you see the sabotage that takes place in all the states that have initiatives, and that is, we only got 2 months to get these signatures. Now, it's ridiculous. We should be able to have a whole year to get the signature, but that's not the way the law is in Massachusetts. So we're stuck. We've got to get 80,000 signatures by November 23rd in Massachusetts to qualify this for the ballot. There are other hurdles, but that's the most difficult one. And that can be realized as a result of having sufficient funds to get those signatures. It's not rocket science. All we got to do is have enough money to hire the professionals to go get the signatures. What you've got to do is go to this website, 9-11cc.org, and you'll see how you can help.
Do you have supporters? So who is supporting this effort that you're doing? And do you have celebrities or other organizations? Or,
well, first off, there are a lot of celebrities that are supporting the 9/11 Truth Movement. We're very thin as an organization at this point in time. I've concentrated primarily on the legal aspects of it, the governmental aspects of it. And so we have other people like George Ripley, Byron Bellizzo, people that have been in the movement for a long time. We got a lot of support within the movement, but it now has to coalesce on one goal, and that is everybody in the movement wants an investigation. They want a commission, and we're the only ones that have a plan to bring this about, because certainly the government won't do it.
We have with us here George Ripley, was just mentioned. George, you a national coordinator, or what is your role in this effort, national effort?
Well, I'm helping with fundraising at this point, and we're finding some success here in Toronto at this very important international meeting. And from here, I'll be devoting the rest of the year to fundraising. But I wanted to mention that this is the potential for growth in this movement goes way beyond the celebrities, the individual celebrities, and the 9/11 movement itself, because we're part of a much larger movement that's happening globally, an awareness of the people that forces are arrayed against them, that they have to personally stand up and participate in suppressing and in revealing, exposing for their motives. And in this case, in the United States, of course, these movements are well established. We are looking to join forces with the peace movement. We are looking to join forces with the environmental movement. We're looking to join forces with all the movements out there that stand for social justice, because social justice ultimately becomes a central organizing principle behind which we are trying to expose the truth.
The New York ballot initiative was not successful, and I believe it was the city council that turned that down. Have you learned anything from that process, and will it be different in these other states? Do they have a different sort of law or setup for their ballot initiative?
I devoted a lot of time. I was running for president at the time, so every time I went into New York, the New York group that was pushing for the ballot initiative asked me if I would make appearances and talk about it. At that time, I had my suspicions about the way they were approaching this legally, but I didn't want to rain on their parade. And they were very successful. They raised 80,000 signatures, and it was thrown out by the courts, not by the city council. Of course, Mayor Bloomberg was not for it either. But what was wrong was they just violated some basic tactical principles of law, and as a result of it, it was thrown out. But here again, because I had been devoting the last 25 years of my life to direct democracy and initiatives, it was easy for me to endorse what they were doing conceptually. But now their precedent, I just picked up on it and said, well, let's not do it the way they did it. Let's now do it a different way, and we'll go at the state level and not at the city level. And so it made all the difference in the world. And then the difference is they had private attorneys drafting their legislation. I've been a legislator. I'm not an attorney, but I've written a lot of law. And so what I did is I then, in concert with the Legislative Council of the state of California, got them to write a law that I sort of dictated. Then I went from that to the state of Oregon and did the same thing there, and then took the Oregon law and transposed it to Massachusetts. Now what I'll do is I'll go back to Oregon and California and other states and just use the same format, because we'll be voting on essentially the same language. And it's not a long document. It's only 3 pages long, but it has two key elements. One, it has which is of course something that's never been tried before, but now been sanctified by these institutions that have bought into this, and that is, it has a joint powers agreement, so that when you pass this in one state, let's say Massachusetts, and later on you want California and other states to go ahead and tie into this joint powers agreement, they can do that. And that's what we would do in going into other states. But initially, what we will do is we'll have the same language in Oregon, we'll have the same language in other states like Colorado, and then it'll be easy for other states to just tie into that.
Just a couple of points perhaps to clarify. You say we need, or Massachusetts needs to have 80,000 signatures. Is it actually that, or do you need more than that because they're going to throw some out? That's number one.
First off, it's 68,000 and change of signatures we need. We figure with the verification process that's ongoing within the state law that we'd be very comfortable at 80,000 signatures. Very comfortable.
Are there minimum requirements from each county, or is it?
Yes. Yeah, you got to spread it around the state. You can't have it more than 25% in, let's say, the Boston area, which would be the easiest place to get signatures. That's the reason why on Monday, going to Massachusetts, and George Ripley will be joining me, and we're going to tour the whole state.
Yes, you'll be appearing in the Great Barrington area on September 19th down in Sheffield. So we'll gather as many people as we can to hear what you have to say, and I'm sure they're looking forward to it.
Well, let me tell you, I come to Massachusetts as a native son. I was born in Springfield, and I was educated in Springfield and in Worcester, and so I've always been a fan of the Red Sox. So understand one thing, I'm going home asking my fellow citizens in Massachusetts to join in this effort.
And that's also the case with me. I got my high school education at Berkshire School, so right there in Sheffield. And I was raised in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, so I'm going home as well. I have sisters in Lexington and Cambridge.
So what does the license plate say of Massachusetts, the spirit of America?
Yes, it is.
Right.
And that's the reason why, from our point of view, this issue can better be fought out in Massachusetts than any other state. Now, the next state that is progressive would be Oregon, but Massachusetts has a patina that nobody else has. It's the media, Boston is the media center of New England. It's one of five political hubs on the east coast of the United States, which is basically the guts of the United States, and that's Boston, New York, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami. And that's why Massachusetts is so significant for our efforts and why we have to raise the money to be able to get those signatures now.
And I understand that you're going to be kicking off this Massachusetts event on the 12th at Logan Airport. Is that correct?
Well, I come into Logan Airport and we'll pay our respects to the memorial. But we're not going to have a press conference there. It's just a personal situation. But on Tuesday at, I believe, 11:30 or 11 o'clock, we're going to be on the Capitol steps. And we're hoping to have a large rally of supporters that will be there calling forth the backing of the people of Massachusetts on this initiative drive.
And this is the first time, as Mike made it clear the other day, the first time that the American people have had standing in court, so to speak. We are presenting an opportunity to the American people, not just to have an opinion, but to do something about it. And that's the novel difference of what we're doing at this time, starting on Monday. So
let me reemphasize that. What this is, this idea of having citizens make the decision, not the government, because they won't do it, citizens making the decision to bring about a new investigation, that, of course, is the guts of direct democracy. And that's the reason why we are using this approach, not only because it's a solution, it's the right solution. The solution's not the government. We know that today in spades. The solution is for the people to have a vehicle to act, not just have an opinion. That doesn't mean anything. To be able to do something legally. The central power of government is lawmaking. We are using the ability of people to make laws in Massachusetts. That is the guts of our undertaking, and that can be put in one phrase. The solution is not the government, it's the people.
Power to the people, huh?
Take America back, but how do we do that? It's the people themselves.
But it's not just the people. It's the people being able to make a law. You know, the people can express themselves in polls. They can express themselves in protesting and agitating. All that proves, by protesting and agitating, that our representative government is dysfunctional. What we're proving with this undertaking is that the government can be valid if the people are able to make a law.
A personal interest comment, perhaps. You were born and bred in Massachusetts, Senator, but yet you wound up being a senator, two-term senator from Alaska. And that's about as far apart geographically as you can get in the United States. If you looked out your window, I'm sure you saw Russia every day, so you were very concerned.
No.
Can you comment on the difference between people in Massachusetts and people in Alaska?
No, I could comment this way, is that when I left Massachusetts, I went into the service, and I was served 3 years. When I came back, I wanted to finish my college, and so I went to Columbia University. After Columbia, I wanted to go someplace and make my way politically. Now, I had been active in politics in Massachusetts ever since I was 15 years old, but my parents came from a very modest area, and I recognized very quickly that the Irish and Italians commanded the political field. Now, how was I going to move forward by coming into politics as a Franco-American, which couldn't get elected to any statewide office? And so I just made research as to where to go to have a chance. And it was Alaska and New Mexico. And I don't like heat, so I went to Alaska. But that doesn't mean that I still don't have my love of Massachusetts and my love of Alaska, too.
And he's still in the kitchen. He can still handle the heat.
Now, we're here at the Toronto hearings. Do you have any reaction to the hearings? What are you thinking about them?
Awesome. Just awesome. These people have done, and the worst thing that's said is that these are a bunch of kooks. These aren't kooks. These are academic people, highly educated, who volunteered of their time to make substantial investigations that make the government storyline look like a fraud. And so if any reasonable American would spend any time and read some of the evidence that they've analyzed, you'd come away and saying, hey, this is ridiculous that we don't accept this. But people are busy with their lives, and they don't have the chance to do this. But by doing the initiative, we will ask people for their signature. So that means we now got to persuade them that there's a reason why we need a new commission. And that's because of all of the work that's been done by the 9/11 truth movement over the last 10 years. It needs to be exposed to the American people.
Now, Barbara Honegger says she thinks that these hearings are going to be a real turning point for the movement and that we're really going to make tracks from here. Do you agree?
Well, I think it will contribute. But until you have an actionable item, you can go ahead and study this for the next 100 years. But until you can, and you can inform the people, but the people can't do anything about what they have in the way of knowledge. They have to be able to do something legal. And the initiative is how they could do it. We don't have that at the federal level. We should, but at the state level. So Barbara is right. We need to bring this forward. But even if you inform people and they don't have the power to do anything about it, what do? You create cynics. You create people who are disillusioned because they know that this should happen and the government's not doing anything about it. That's the tragedy of American governance today. People should go to 911cc.org. All the stuff is there about the evidence, about what we're doing, and primarily about the ability to help bring this about.
Thank you very much for all of your efforts, and thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
And again, that was an interview that radio show host Frank Tolupko and I did with Senator and former presidential candidate Mike Gravel of Alaska at the Toronto hearings this past September. To learn more about the ballot initiative process that Senator Gravel has spearheaded to get at the truth of 9/11, you can go to their website, which is 9-11cc.org. And if you'd like to hear Senator Gravel's speech at the Toronto hearings, you can go to their website, which is torontohearings.org. And I think you can also get it by going to YouTube and searching for Senator Mike Gravel. After spending some time in Massachusetts and examining the ballot initiative process there, the campaign felt that they didn't have enough time or funds to pull it off this year in Massachusetts. And here's what they say on their website about where they're currently at. After weeks of careful research, the Citizens 9/11 Commission campaign has decided that Colorado and North Dakota will be its target ballot initiative states for the 2012 election cycle. Apparently, these two states have a more favorable political climate, and also North Dakota has a less costly signature gathering process, and these two states have a filing and signature gathering timeline that is more favorable than some of the other states. So that's why they've chosen those two states to move forward with the ballot initiative process for the 2012 election cycle. And now I want to tell you about Barbara Honegger, who will be speaking in Western Mass on December 2nd, at the University of Hartford on December 3rd, and in Boston on December 4th. Barbara Honegger worked as a researcher at the Hoover Institution before joining the Reagan administration as a researcher and policy analyst in 1980. She headed Reagan's Gender Discrimination Agency review before resigning in August 1983. While working for the Reagan administration, she discovered information that convinced her that George H.W. Bush and William Casey had conspired to make sure that Iran did not release the U.S. hostages until Jimmy Carter had been defeated in the 1980 presidential elections. In 1987, she began leaking information to journalists about the Reagan administration. After Reagan left office, she published the book October Surprise in 1989. In her book, Honegger claimed that in 1980, William Casey and others in the Reagan presidential campaign made a deal at two sets of meetings in July and August at the Ritz Hotel in Madrid with Iranians to delay release of the American-held hostages in Iran until after the November 1980 presidential elections. Reagan's aides promised the Iranians would get a better deal if they waited until Carter was defeated to release the hostages. Since her book was published, other sources have come forward to confirm her story. Now Barbara Honegger has turned her research to 9/11 and particularly to the Pentagon. And she has some really interesting information about the Pentagon that she's gathered over the years and talking to people who were in the Pentagon at the time. She has a great PowerPoint presentation that you won't want to miss. In Connecticut, she'll be speaking at the University of Hartford at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium. The event is free, so mark your calendars. That's Saturday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. And hear Barbara Honecker present the evidence about what really happened at the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001. And now I want to remind you that the Occupy Hartford folks could use your support. To see how you can help them out, their website is OccupyHartfordCT.org. So that's OccupyHartfordCT.org. They told me that in addition to what is listed on their website, what they really need are more occupiers. You can go there for as little or as long as you like. You can spend any amount of time that fits your schedule and your level of hardiness. So please give them a hand in any way you can. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.